And we move to case number 5. That is Johnson versus Siemens Building. You're representing Siemens Building?
I am, Your Honor.
And as we know, contrary to the advice that this case was set for oral argument today, the client for the appellant chose not to appear. We'll hear from you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is John Michaels. I represent the appellee in this case, Siemens Building Technologies, Incorporated. Since I don't have an argument from the appellant, I'll give you just a very brief factual overview of the facts. Mr. Johnson had filed a claim or a charge.
We're familiar with the facts.
Yeah. Okay, very well. Then I won't go into it. At this point, district court granted summary judgment in favor of Siemens on Mr. Johnson's race claim, gender claim, and retaliation claim. It was a 44-page opinion by Judge Pallmeyer. Siemens is urging the court to affirm the summary judgment on appeal. Mr. Johnson fails to establish a prima facie case of race or gender discrimination on his claims concerning Siemens' failure to provide him with international shipping training and Siemens' alleged failure to accommodate his child care requirements. The case is a little complicated because of the overlap on the charges, but basically the case of race and gender discrimination revolve around a decision by Siemens to train a white female co-worker in international shipping, a woman named Joanne Zaucha. Prior to training Mr. Johnson had been in the shipping department at Siemens Building Technologies for some time longer than Ms. Zaucha. And so he claimed he was being discriminated against when he wasn't selected for the international shipping training. He also claims he was discriminated against on the basis of race and gender because because Siemens accommodated Ms. Zaucha's request to modify her work hours so that she would qualify for a state-sponsored child care program. Siemens' position, upheld by the district court, is that neither of those two actions by Siemens constitute an adverse employment action. In other words, the selection for international shipping doesn't affect his material have a material effect on his terms or conditions of employment. His position didn't require it. There was a logical basis for Ms. Zaucha to be selected for that position because of the hours overlap of her job with the hours of the International Shipping Department. Mr. Johnson had established by this point that he did not want to work overtime. He'd actually refused to work overtime, and the international shipping requirements occurred in many cases after the time he would normally have left. So Siemens said, fine, we'll train in international shipping. We'll train the employee who's willing to stay after and work after. With regard to the child care issue, Ms. Zaucha,
the district court upheld your position on the training issue, but not on the child care. Is that correct? Yeah, you said you were upheld on both of those.
My understanding from the district court's opinion is that the changeover in child care or the failure to the allegation of discrimination with regard to child care wasn't an adverse employment action. At least that's my recollection. In fact, the child care situation didn't rise to that level, but even if it did, that Siemens had in fact accommodated Mr. Johnson in his child care request. In fact, accommodated him to a much greater extent than it did Ms. Zaucha, and that under those circumstances, he couldn't really claim that there was any kind of discrimination. There was no issue of material fact with regard to that. So at that stage, in moving past the prima facie analysis, again, the justifications used by Siemens in support of its decisions, the fact that Ms. Zaucha was somebody who was going to be staying after work, was willing to stay after work, had hours that accommodated the international shipping issue, provided ample justification for the decision. With regard to the child care issue, there was no issue of pretext because, again, Siemens had accommodated Mr. Johnson to a much greater extent than it had Ms. Zaucha. The situation involving Ms. Zaucha was only a temporary one. It was revoked. The reduced hours were revoked the minute Mr. Johnson complained about it. And under those circumstances, she said there was no pretext, there was no adverse employment action, thus no discrimination. Mr. Johnson raises then a retaliation claim, and he has two claims for retaliation. The first involves a claim that he was suspended for a period of 3 days, along with a coworker with whom he'd had an ongoing dispute that predates any protected activity. He was suspended for 3 days in mid-October 2004, and then he was terminated from employment as a result of an outburst, actually a verbal and physical assault on the same female coworker that occurred on November 10th, 2004, and as a result of that, he was terminated. He claims that both of those actions, the suspension and the termination, comprise retaliation. Again, the analysis, I think, by the district court is very good here and directly on point. The motivating factors for the suspension were that he had refused to get along with his coworker, and in fact, both employees, Mr. Johnson and the coworker, who were, for purposes of the suspension anyway, similarly situated, were motivated, in fact, by this long-term dispute that these employees had failed to resolve. Mr. Johnson tries to claim that there was protected activity that occurred in advance of that via a September 16th email/meeting. And it's not real clear from the brief as to exactly how this all plays out, but there was a complaint that he supposedly made to a senior manager, supervisor two levels above his own level, that this manager had complained to this manager that Siemens was treating this white female coworker better than it was him on the basis of race. That falls through because, again, there was no indication that there was any communication from this senior manager down to the lower level. The people that made the decision to suspend him were operating at a slightly lower level, and the suspension occurred under circumstances that there should be no inference of race or gender or retaliation for the ultimate decision to suspend him. He was put on suspension for 3 days with the employee with whom he refused to get along. He comes back. He receives, Mr. Johnson receives his third disciplinary warning as a result. He received two prior written disciplinary warnings saying if you keep doing this, you're going to get fired. Third time, this was his third disciplinary warning. He comes back from suspension. 2 days after he's back from suspension, he files an EEOC charge. He apparently can see the handwriting on the wall that he's in real trouble here with regard to his employment. He files an EEOC charge claiming discrimination. He then, on November 10th, in the shipping area, yells at and hits this female coworker on the shoulder with a rolled-up shipping manifest, yelling at her that she doesn't know how to do her job. She's shaken. She reports it. Siemens does a full and complete investigation and terminates him. Now, other than the timing, and the district court notes this, Judge Pallmeyer notes this, other than the timing, there is no indication of retaliatory evidence in the case, either direct or indirect, that would trigger this kind of a decision by Siemens. And under those circumstances, the district judge said, you know, we've got plenty of evidence here. You can't show that this decision by Siemens was motivated by anything other than the action that you undertook on the 10th of November. There's no indication that it was a pretext. There's no indication that Siemens didn't believe this incident hadn't happened. And as a result, the termination was validated by Judge Pallmeyer and determined that there was no retaliatory motive there. And I've got a few minutes if the court has any questions.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Michaels.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.